Now, why is the history of emotions so important in post-colonial research?
I think emotions so important in buoying, obviously, sentiment and in informing how people feel about the ways in which they view and experience governance or misgovernance in colonial contexts.
Now, your contribution to the book Anxieties, Fear and Panic in Colonial Settings is titled The Art of Panicking Quietly. Why is the emotional response of panicking significant, and why did you decide to label it as an art?
Tried to focus on in this article how, in fact, how little we focus on the British experience, on how they felt they should behave as colonial overlords in India, and how much emphasis there was on, among them, on proper conduct and how they should conduct themselves in front of what they called the natives, right? A really important part of that was never showing that you were afraid. And therefore, what I tried to do in my work is to demonstrate how the performance of bravery was a major thread in colonial rule in India. I focus on the sort of 20th century, really, and how the experience of panic in particular in response to fear was subverted, and therefore the art of panicking quietly, which is what I called the article, becomes a way of dealing with the fact that it's becoming increasingly dangerous to govern India because there is such large-scale forms of revolt in response to what many Indians see as mismanagement.
How did the responses or reactions to anti-colonial violence shift throughout the kind of early to late colonialism periods?
Well, it's interesting. There's always been a real emphasis, I think, especially in 20th century anti-colonialism, on non-violence. And I think that, of course, comes from the emphasis on Gandhi in the anti-colonial movement from 1915 on. But what I think we're starting to see now, there's a sort of a broader base of research which is actually looking at the violence that intersects a lot of these sort of non-violent movements, of which Gandhi's is, obviously the most important. And we see those all throughout the 19th century as well. So there were actually regular rebellions or revolt or uprisings against British rule. They were particularly prominent in the 19th century. But in the 20th century, we also see them in and around the Gandhian movements as well, but they've just been overshadowed by a lot of the emphasis on non-violence in anti-colonialism in general. So I would argue that violence is actually reasonably consistent, but it just gets drowned out in terms that we don't give it much attention in history writing in the 20th century.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I think, the Gandhian narrative is a very attractive one. I mean, it is the story of how Gandhi is able to get this, enormous amount of mass support for what is essentially a very disciplined movement against the British is a very compelling one. It certainly, creates, great industries of, watching and reading. And I think it's always been a model of resistance that's been very compelling globally. I mean, Gandhi has influenced so many resistance movements from, the civil rights movement in the US to, the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. So I think it's an extremely compelling narrative, but it's not the only narrative, I would argue, that's happening in British India, certainly.
Unfortunately, Dr. McLean, we're going to have to leave it there because we've run out of time. But thank you so much for your insight this afternoon.
My pleasure, Jess. Thank you very much.